This podcast replay is brought to you by EJDConstruction.com. Call Eric at EJD Construction at 305-433-4843. They do it all, residential or commercial. EJDConstruction.com is the custom home builder and general contractor you can trust. 305-433-4843.
Hello, our numero tres. Well, half of third, right? Because technically, we'll go into the fourth hour by the time we start with Franco Panizo at the bottom of this hour to talk a little Inter Miami. By the way, nice job by the Marlins. They defeat the Mets last night. They beat the Mets 5-4. Floro gets his fourth save. Isain Diaz hits his third home run. Alex Jackson, by the way, gets his first home run. Brian De La Cruz went 3-4 with a couple of RBIs. Carlos Carrasco, don't call me King Carrasco, is on the mound tonight for the Mets. And then Zach Thompson, of course, for the Marlins, sporting that 2.33 ERA. So they've won two in a row against the Mets. Let's see if they can beat the Mets one more time. That would be really, really, really nice. Tonight, Orlando City will host Inter Miami, 8 o'clock for that game. I'm probably going to see it late because I'm at my daughter's graduation today, which that should be fun. Tomorrow we get our Hall of Fame game at 8 o'clock, Cowboys and Steelers. So we get our first look at football. We watch that game for about 2 minutes and then we say, what are we watching? Right. Yeah. Cause like, I only want to watch backups and third and fourth stringers with a Dolphin uniform on. Right. I kind of get bored with the other ones. You know, it's funny because I'll tell you, I'll watch other summer league games, not just the Heat games, just because I want to see all these other guys. But when it comes to like preseason Hall of Fame game, oh man, that is a terrible game, dude. That is a terrible game. Starters don't even play in that game. It's brutal, dude. Brutal. I don't even know. You think Dak is going to play tomorrow night? Coming back from that injury. Well, no, wait a minute. He got another injury, didn't he? That's right. So, yeah, he's probably not, actually. All right, what else do we have here? Miami Heat, they acquired Markieff Morris yesterday. And I got to tell you, for me, the Markieff Morris, again, we're talking about another older player at 31, not a consistent shooter. Now, he is a tough guy. And that's one thing that I will say, this is going to be a blue-collar, lunch-pail, get-in-your-face type team. They're going to depend on slowing down people's offenses in order to stay in the game offensively. And Markieff, I think, adds a defensive element to the team. Offensively, I don't know how much more consistent he really can be or reliable, and especially as a three-point shooter, especially in this kind of league. That's why I keep telling you, man, you know you got Duncan Robinson going to hit threes. It's about Tyler Hero, man. It's about Tyler Hero taking a step to get to the all-star status. That's the kind of step you need from him. You need Bam to become a mother effer, okay? He has to become a son of a bitch in that on that team. He has to, you know, Tom Brady is a son of a bitch. Michael Jordan, a son of a bitch. The really good players, they're a-holes, dude. They're a-holes at times. You think Marino was, yeah, he's great to joke around probably away from the field, but on the field, he was a son of a bitch. He didn't care. He wanted to win. Alonzo Mourning, that guy's not fun to be around when you're losing. He doesn't like losing. He hates losing. Bam has to turn into that kind of guy. But problem is, he's such a great young man. He's so nice that he can't do it. Like Dwayne Wade's like, he's the all-American boy, kills you with a smile, and guts your ass out when he has to at the end of a game. Because Dwayne had that all-American look. He had the baby smile and the baby face and all that good stuff. And a super nice kid and all that. But then when he got on the court, he was a mother effer. Dr. J had some of that too. Dr. J was super classy off the field, all that. I mean, off the court, all that kind of stuff. But then when he got on the court, he was a mother effer. Magic Johnson, you know, magical smile, magnetic personality. One of the most likable human beings you could ever meet when you see him on camera and talking, because you just got to like Magic. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to dislike Magic. But then when he got on the court, he wasn't having any of that. Larry Bird might have been a bit of a pain in the ass off the court, and he was a son of a bitch on the court. And to me, Bam, I get it, dude, but you need to go look at Wade. All right, you're kind of like Wade. You're the good guy, the nice guy, the likable guy, but you need to turn it on when you walk onto the court. And you got to become a mother effer on the court. And I don't know if he can become that. But they're going to need those young legs to help them, not just through the regular season, but by the time you get to the playoffs, and if you want to make a deep run, they're going to need the young legs from that engine to kind of carry some of the horsepower, because you may not have the same horsepower anymore in late May and June with a Jimmy Butler, with, you know, a Kyle Lowry. These are older players that have some mileage on them. That's why I keep telling you. And Markieff Morris, yeah, I like him as a tough nose, hard nose, like role player, but I don't look at him like a savior in any way, shape, or form. He's just like a decent player to have off the bench, and it's going to be more about defense than offense for him. So I know Jimmy Butler's going to play defense. I know Kyle Lowry's going to play defense. I know Bam's going to play defense. I know PJ Tucker's going to play defense. But they're going to need the explosive side of the offense. They don't have enough offense. And some of these guys that I just talked about, they're not good enough shooting. That's why Duncan has got to be lights out. And I can count on Duncan to score a lot. But Tyler is the guy. Tyler needs to be the other young guy that creates havoc out there. And then Bam has to become an SOB. I don't know how you do it. I don't know if you can. Do we know of a player that was kind of like Bam on any sport and then became a son of a bitch? A guy that we looked at and was so nice and carried himself so well and was likable, and you want him as your son, right? Because, I mean, what father would not be proud of the way Bam carries himself, right? I mean, it's impossible. So do you remember a guy that was like that was really nice the first couple of years and then finally figured it out, the light went on, and that was the difference in his? I'm trying to remember if there's a guy like that that we said in the past, either locally or in another team, and we said, you know, good guy, man, good player, damn right, but he needs a little bit of an edge and he doesn't have it. And somehow he found the edge. Like Kevin Durant was always a great player. Now he became an asshole, but had nothing to do with on the court. He was always great. Even when he was the nicest kid with his backpack going to press conferences and the ice cream cone on his thing, he was always going to gut your ass out as a player. And then he just became an asshole. I'm talking about the guy that needed to become an asshole to give himself an edge on his sport. Is there a guy? Kevin Garnett? No, I thought Kevin Garnett was that in Minnesota, dude. He didn't need to be. I get it, in Boston he became kind of a jerk, but he was a hell of a player in Minnesota, dude. He just didn't have enough around him in Minnesota. That's all. I think Kevin Garnett had, you know, that streak in him from the get-go. I don't remember that. Alonzo Mourning always was. I watched him in Georgetown, dude. Alonzo Mourning, if I remember correctly, came out of high school practicing with the Olympic team. Alonzo Mourning was a son of a bitch the entire time. That never changed. That's definitely not one. Let's see, what else? We need a power forward to help Bam. He's alone with no help. Chris, limitations, bro. They have limitations in money. They have limitations in resources. So they don't have the cap space. They have no picks whatsoever. The Heat have put themselves in a really difficult position in that sense. So they can only do what they could settle for pretty much. And I think they did the best that they can do. And they're going to have some holes in the way they're building this team, whether it's age or lack of positioning, that they need a power forward. I'm not arguing with you that they need one. I know they need one. You are right. I'm just telling you the Heat just didn't have a lot of flexibility. They have limited to no resources. And that's the problem. So yeah, it doesn't fly. Jimmy Butler, I think, always had a nasty streak in him. He just had to develop his game because he was a defensive guy. So he was always a son of a bitch. Yeah, I think Jimmy just had to improve his game, not his attitude, not his nastiness, not his will. That has nothing to do with it. Alan Ogg, you're bringing up the late, great Alan Ogg. And I'm having a little fun, okay? But, you know, I was a season ticket holder in those early years of Alan Ogg. And I remember whenever there was those few games, that was a blowout. And Miami had, because I say few games because, you know, first couple of years was kind of tough. But whenever, you know, they had a lead at the end of a game that was really comfortable, we would start chanting for Alan Ogg. And the Ogster would come out and the place would go crazy and all of that. That was fun. I got to say, those early teams, I get it. They had their struggles and they had to learn how to win and finally get to the playoffs and all that kind of stuff. But man, we had a lot of fun with those teams early on. We did. It was so new and everything. So all these experiences were the first times and things like that. So we were experiencing it as a community. I had a really good time going to those games with my then girlfriend, now wife. But yeah, I do remember that. That was good. That was definitely a lot of fun. Kobe Bryant, I think, always had it, man. Again, just had to improve his game. But I think he always had that nasty streak in him. Hale, with your connections with the Dolphins, can you get Dan Marino to make an appearance on the postgame show? No. No. I have his number, too. But I don't think so. Dan doesn't do a lot, man. He's not so gung-ho on it. But I know Dan. He's always really nice to me. Always has been. But, you know, it's just he doesn't do a lot, bro. He'll go on with Joe every once in a while. But that's about it. You know? It's just not one of his things. He's not a big fan, not of me personally, because he has nothing against, he can't have anything against me because he and I have always gotten along great. He knows I'm an enormous supporter of his. So, you know, that has nothing to do with it. But it's, look, I got to be honest. I'm not trying. Maybe I could make it happen. I don't know, you know, but I almost feel like I don't want to bother him with it. You know what I mean? Because I know that he's not the biggest fan of doing this kind of stuff, you know? So, let's see. Afternoon, Finns fans. Lisa Rose says, I was at the 100th like today. Nice. Nice. We crossed 100. I love it. If I could get a picture with Dan Marino, that's on my bucket list. Well, John, I would tell you this. If there are no restrictions next year, okay, and just give you a little tip, if there are no restrictions next year, go to Mobile, Alabama, because he's going there now with the Dolphins and he goes for a couple of days. And Mobile it's pretty amazing because everybody that's anybody in the NFL is there and they're just walking around. I mean, this is 30 years and I've been doing it for a little over 20, going to the Senior Bowl. And I've told you guys this like a ton of times, that you can go to the Senior Bowl and if you work it, you're going to run into famous people in restaurants, bars, right around the team hotel. You hang around all those places, the practice field, this, that, you're going to have an opportunity and you're going to run into famous people in the NFL. And then we can mention the young players that are there in the Senior Bowl, that those are future stars. You can meet some of those too. They have autograph sessions. They have all kinds of stuff. I'm just saying that if you're a hardcore football fan, the Senior Bowl is a fantastic experience. I'm just telling you. It's something that you go to Ruth Chris, you know, in the early evening, and half that place is NFL people. I'm just telling you, you know, plenty of the seafood restaurants that are there, whether it's Winsel's or something else, you'll find at Winsel's after practice is done, 120 NFL people there. I'm not joking. 120. GMs, coaches, scouts, ex-players that are working on other teams, and you'll recognize them right away. All that kind of stuff. I've been telling you this for two decades now, that the Senior Bowl, if you're a hardcore football fan, it's one of the best experiences for a hardcore football fan. You go there for the whole week, and you go through all the different events that they have going on, and then you go to the game, and the game atmosphere is so freaking awesome. I'm just telling you, it's one of those things. Lisa says, met Dan on several occasions. Nice guy, but not big on signing if lots of people are around. He feels that if he starts with one person, then it blows up. But very cool if it's in a low-key setting. I can tell you've met him, Lisa. I can tell you've met him. Because he's not big on that, man. He's just kind of a private guy. You know, if you catch him somewhere, like Lisa says, it's a tight setting. It's only you and him, or you and two friends, and you meet him, and it's somewhere away from people. Yeah, he's cool, but he may not. He's not the most comfortable person doing all that kind of stuff. That's just how people are sometimes. Everybody's a little different. Let's see. Omar says, offsides from Shaquin Griffin motivates Brissett to air it out, and Allen Hurns catches a deep 45-yard pass for a touchdown. Sam Egwavon had a sack of Sinet. Rookie Gerald Dokes drops a simple one from Brissett, followed by another drop by Lynn Bowden. Lynn Bowden Jr. drops an easy crosser. Okay, there you go. Javon Holland picks off Tua on a deep pass intended for Albert Wilson. Was just a bad overthrow. Blitz packages rattling Tua. Is what Omar puts. I don't think anything rattles Tua. I think you either make a good play or a bad play. I don't think that kid gets rattled. I watched them walk into the national championship game and win. There's no rattling in Tua. I think he either succeeds or he fails like the rest of us. Tua's interception streak ended with Holland's pick in Holland's first day as first-team safety. Okay, so there you go. Dolphins dialing up blitz packages, and Tua sacked on the second straight play by Brendan Scarlett. This time the coaches blow the whistle before Tua throws the ball. Let's see, what else do we have here? Jalen Waddle just returned the first kickoff of the very heavy special teams practice. There you go. Should have included earlier linebacker Jalen Phillips also not practicing today. Yes, we know that. So there you go. Those are some of the things going on around camp. If you have any questions, by the way, you can send them in. Okay. Let's see. If I could get, let me see. Me. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. What do you think about the Heat moves? Ronald, I listened to the first half hour of the show yesterday. Okay, that you're better off there. I'm not going to repeat everything, but it's all there, man. There are two different segments from that first half hour that are up. Or you can just listen to the straight half hour. And then you can actually listen to my half hour and then listen to Ira Winderman talk about it also from yesterday's show. So I suggest you go there, my friend, and it'll all be there. You know how it is on the show. We don't really, or maybe you don't, Ronald, we don't really continue to repeat everything we've talked about. We move on and give you, you know, new material that we want to talk about. Let's see. At training camp, Tua has been amazing despite an interception. Nobody's going to go mistake-free, bro. You know what I mean? It's all good. He's going to be fine. Oh, that's it. Lynn is out. I don't know what that means, Steven. What do you mean Lynn is out? Are you talking about Lynn Bowden? Because you put L-I-N. So I'm not sure what you're talking about. You got to be a little bit more clear on that one, Steven. You got me lost a little bit. I apologize, but I'm not picking up on what you're saying. I would give my two kidneys and another organ just to take a picture with Dan Marino. Big O, sir, I think it benefits Tua that our defense is that awesome. Oh, for sure. For sure. Definitely. Oh, Jeremy Lin. Is that what you're talking about? Jeremy Lin? What are we talking about? Are we going back to the son of a bitch conversation? Is that what that is? Too many receivers to drop one pass. LOL. Paul Warfield's still the best receiver in Dolphin history. Probably. Yeah. Yeah, it's Warfield 1, Clayton 2, probably. Yeah. I would go with that. And, you know, if somebody wanted to tell me Mark Clayton was number one, we could have that discussion. I can't necessarily call you crazy or that you're wrong. Paul Warfield was amazing. So was Mark Clayton, bro. Mark Clayton was pretty damn special. He was fun, man. He was one of those dudes you definitely want to enjoy. All right, let me see. What else do we have here that I wanted to talk about? Let's see. Kemba Walker goes to the Knicks, the often injured one at this point. I know he's from New York, so he gets to return to his home city, home state, but I don't find it to be much of a move. The Knicks will be a team fighting with Chicago and others for a 7-8 seed, something like that, in the playoffs. But, hey, they're at least fighting for a playoff spot, so that's actually a good thing for the New York Knicks. Let's see, what else do we have? Have you seen the Raiders, what's gone on? They've had three players already retire from camp. And you think about it. So three guys have retired in the Raiders camp, and you're wondering, well, what the hell is going on, right? So first of all, Theo Reddick, who is a pass-catching running back, played most of his career with the Detroit Lions. A good pass-catching back, by the way. Like a really good one, like excellent hands. I think you guys remember a game against the Lions that Theo caught a touchdown, a really important touchdown at the end of a game against Miami. But anyway, Reddick ends up getting a COVID positive test. And that forced him to retire. He didn't want to deal with it anymore. He wanted to protect his health over that. Then a linebacker named James Oluwalu, who's 26 years old, also ended up retiring, not because of COVID. And then yesterday, Sam Young, former Dolphin offensive tackle, played with the Rams also, played with several teams. Not really a player, let's just say. He's a body that you have in camp. You hope at times he could be serviceable as a tackle. We had him here in Miami. He was not impressive by any stretch whatsoever, but he retired also, and he's 34 years old. But that's three players. And I just keep thinking about that environment that John Gruden has created. And when I remember watching the Hard Knocks a couple years ago, it was just so cheesy and corny watching him. What was that saying he had? Like, if you're with me, pound on the table or whatever. It was like some stupid ass thing that he would do. And he did it even in the coach's room and everything else. And I just think John Gruden is one of the best scam artists I've ever seen in my life. Okay. He's just a character making those silly faces of his and the whole Chucky thing and all that kind of stuff. And I know things went his way in Tampa. He was gifted a generational defense. And to his credit, he got a couple of offensive pieces to kind of finish off the offense. And he was able to, you know, get it done. Now, that's handing him a generational defense and a couple of pieces already on offense that all he needed was to find a couple of other pieces on offense to kind of complete it. But if it's up to him to build the whole team, then he has a problem and he can't. Like with the Raiders, you know, he wasn't picking the talent. That was the old man in those days. The old man was in charge. No coach was in charge in those days. It was all Al and his staff doing everything. So that team that got to, you know, I think the Super Bowl, they lost the Super Bowl and they've got to an AFC championship game also. That team was basically built by Al Davis. And then he goes to Tampa. And like I said, he's gifted something and he was able to finish it. But then after that, as the years went on, that team took another step back and another step back and another step back. It never got any better. He never was able to maintain what he had at that moment. There was a decline every single year under John Gruden. And then he goes to ESPN for several years and he's doing that quarterback show when he's never developed a quarterback in his entire life. So how in the hell is he supposed to actually, you know, how are we supposed to believe that this guy's a quarterback guru when he's never, ever actually, you know, developed a quarterback on his own? And so now the Raiders, who obviously aren't led by a lot of intelligence. I mean, look at Mark Davis. That just the haircut alone is pretty much an indictment on him, but you give him $100 million contract. Any of you out there that are watching, are you a Raiders fan? Is there anybody that's on the chat board right now, a Raiders fan? If you're listening to the podcast, are you a Raiders fan? And if you are you sick to your stomach or something by now? Have you figured it out? Because I know some of you Raiders fans, you got all pumped up about Chucky. Meanwhile, I was laughing the entire time about Chucky. I just wonder. Just one of those things. All right, give me 60 seconds. We're going to talk to Franco Panizo. When we come back, we'll get into Inter Miami. They will take on Orlando City. We switch gears. We go from football to football. That's next.
Sports fans love a place with great food, cold drinks, and TVs everywhere. That's why sports fans love Sports Grill and their 7 amazing locations. Check out the Bird Road location at 11481 Southwest 40th Street in the back corner of the West Bird Shopping Center. Sports Grill is also now offering some great employment opportunities. All kinds of positions are now available, from kitchen to hosting. Call for more information at 305-485-8845. From wraps to salads to amazingly delicious specialty dishes, Sports Grill is the home to the legendary special Grilled Wings. Since 1987, Sports Grill, good food, good drink, and good friends.
This is the Big O Show.
For over 16 years, EJDConstruction.com has provided South Florida residents quality craftsmanship, accurate project management, and exceptional service. That's why EJDConstruction.com is an A-rated member of Angie's List and the Better Business Bureau. When you're looking for the right custom home builder for additions or home remodeling, please call my friend Eric at 305-433-4843. That's 305-433-4843 for EJDConstruction.com.
This is the Big O Show.
All righty, we are back. Love it. You got some feedback going on there, Franco. What's going on?
I don't know. I have my headphones on.
Okay. All right. welcome aboard. We're going to talk a little Inter Miami as the boys are coming off a draw and they're coming off a win now. And so has the tide turned? Are they playing better football or did the ball just bounce their way? We're going to find out more with Franco Panizo, of course, from Miami Total Football. Make sure you follow also on Twitter at Miami Total Football. More importantly, subscribe to the podcast. He does an excellent job of going over everything that's going on in the world of Inter Miami. Tonight, 8 o'clock, they're in Orlando to take on Orlando City. And Franco, first of all, good afternoon, my friend. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. I was planning to go to Orlando tonight, but I played pickup on Monday with some friends in Miami. Aggravated this lower back injury that I have that pops up from time to time. And I don't think I can make it 6 hours round trip. So I'm going to take it in from home, I think, unless I have a quick sudden urge to just go and deal with the pain. But other than that, I'm good. Inter Miami got back to winning ways this weekend. So there's been some good things to talk about rather than just the negative, because that's obviously been how this season has gone for the most part.
Yeah, and by the way, you're way too young to have back it. An old fart like me can have back issues, but a young stud like you, come on.
I'm not that young. I look younger than I am. I'm not that young anymore.
All right. So your assessment of the last two games, they picked up the draw, they picked up the win. I kind of look at it as gritty efforts, actually, but I don't know how you look at the whole situation. So as you're breaking down the improved play, I guess, in the last two games, how would you describe it?
So it has been improved from what it was from, you know, obviously that seven-game winless run. It was six-game losing streak, seven-game winless run with a tie. It's been better in terms of the effort and at times the way that they can control the game and dictate the tempo, but still not for enough time throughout the course of the game. They don't sustain that level over the course of the match. Obviously, it's a game with two teams and the other team's going to have its moments as well, but the goal is to try to sustain that high level for as long as possible. It gives you better odds to win, better chances to win. This last game that they won came down to a coaching change, a tactical switch in the game that changed the course of the match. So, you know, kudos to Phil Nello for that. And the ball just happened to bounce their way this time too. Because if even with through the run of play over the course of the 90 minutes, it's a pretty even game, all things considered. Montreal could have taken a 2-1 lead at one point. Like, just from the run of play, there's not signs that tell you that it's vastly improved. It's just, again, moments here and there where they've started to piece together some better soccer. But again, I don't know if that's going to be enough for the rest of the season.
Let me start from the back. Are you impressed with Marsman?
Yes. Yes. I like what I've seen. I like what I've seen so far. It's early. And his first game was a 5-0 defeat, but I like what I've seen from him. More of a commanding presence at the back, more sure in his decisions. Like they say in Spanish, that más seguridad. Which doesn't really translate to English, that he gives you more security, but you just feel like there's more of a presence with him there, more decisive decisions in the way he comes off to collect the ball or punch the ball. He's also much, much better than John McCarthy with his feet, very good with his distribution. So I think he's been good so far. And I think once I said this to someone last week, maybe at practice, I think with more time, the more comfortable he gets in that locker room, in the team, I think he can become a lead figure for this team. I think just from what I've seen from him and the interactions we've had with him the couple of times he's done press conferences, I think his personality will lend to that. So I think at some point, don't be surprised if he's one of the leaders of this team in the not too distant future.
Your assessment of the guys in front of him right now?
So the defense has been... At one point this season, I said it was the strength of the team. I would still say that it's the strength of the team. I would still say that that's the part of the team that's out of the three lines or the three parts of the team, defense, midfield, and forwards, the attack. I still think the defense is probably the best right now. Now, that said, they've had their issues. I think part of it, this is just my opinion, is that Phil Neville has done a lot of tinkering, a lot of changing formations, partnerships. So there's not been a real understanding between or a clear understanding or clear enough understanding between players at certain times. They've also not been able to hold on to the ball in the midfield for large stretches of the season. that leads to other teams having more of the ball and more attacks, and then that challenges your defense that much more. And, you know, enough pressure can burst the pipes. So you've seen them have their issues. I wouldn't say the defense is exceptional or incredible by any means, but I think if you ask me what I think has been the best line on Inter Miami this season, I would say the defense probably has been to this point.
What has been Neville's best move so far in the last couple of games that you've been that you've agree with or impressed with?
So there's two, but I'll, you know, if you're just asking me for one, I think it was
I think bringing
Federico Higuain back into the lineup was a good move. I think that's, if you watch Federico Higuain with this team, he gives them more of an ability to build out, better in possession, quicker with his decisions, has a lot of movement in terms of, you know, he's obviously a 10, so he starts in the middle, but he drifts out to the right and left. He looks for the ball often. He shows for the ball. He gives players passing options. And when he receives the ball, he moves it very quickly. There was one sequence in the last game where he touches it twice in the sequence. They start in the back and they try to build up. And he touches it twice with clever, nice, great technical back heels that help Inter Miami move the ball from the defensive zone to the attacking zone. And that's stuff that they haven't really had much of this season. So I think bringing him back into the starting lineup has been helpful. He hasn't done a whole lot of creating thus far, but that's, I have my reasons for that that I think go beyond him.
And yeah, the people he's sending it to aren't really creative, is what you're saying.
No, that means that, listen, he's the most creative player. You could maybe say Gonzalo is creative too now at this point in his career, but he has nobody.
Robbie has a little bit too in him.
Robbie's not a creator. Robbie's a dribbler that like right. Cut back on his right. But that's not a creator. Creator is someone that, like, you know, makes the pass.
Oh, you're creating the score. I got you.
Yeah. Okay. So we haven't seen him do a lot of that, Federico. You know, we had, especially when he was with the Columbus Crew in MLS. I think part of what's happening is that Inter Miami doesn't have players that like to make those runs in behind, be it diagonals. Runs over the back shoulder of defenders, runs into space. So I think that's limiting Federico Higuain's ability to play make. I don't know if that's also a coaching decision, if Phil Neville prefers them to have the ball at their feet rather than running into space. But again, I think Federico overall has been a plus.
He does stuff that no one else can do on the damn team, actually. He's the only life they have in the midfield, actually, right now. I mean, is there anybody else that can bring life to the midfield on that team? Really, honestly.
I mean, if you're talking about attacking, you know, and then moving the ball, I mean, no. But if you're just talking about midfield, because there's different type of midfielders. There's defensive-minded ones. There's the attacking ones.
No, I'm talking about attacking. I'm talking about offensive.
Attacking-wise, no. I mean, there's you know, you have Rodolfo Pizarro should be that guy, but he's not. No. And, you know, I have questions about how happy he is now at this point. Like, and this is just my observation. Nothing I've really heard. Just watching him play with Mexico, it's still, he looks like it shows a level of apathy that is kind of concerning. You know, last year at this point, before he kind of hit this dip, you would see him post a lot on social media, him working out, him shirtless, looked like a really happy person in the midst of the peak of the pandemic when you were, you know, mostly forced to stay at home. And now this year, you barely see him post on social media. You don't see him play with this joy or this happiness. There was a moment, if I don't know if you watched the CONCACAF Gold Cup in the semifinals, he came onto that game and delivered the game-winning assist in the 99th minute, right before they were about to go to extra time with Canada, Mexico with Canada. And Mexico explodes into scenes of ecstasy, the players, the fans, and the stands. And Rodolfo Pizarro, all he did was lift up his arm and go like this. That to me says something about, you know, where his level of happiness is. Now that could be just making too much out of it. Maybe he was tired, whatever. But I think
maybe his coach isn't around either anymore. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I think something happened. I think something along the way during his stay in South Florida, something happened to him. The compilation of things and things not working on the field, and then pressure, and then Mexico, and things not going well there. I don't know if it was that or something else, but I feel like something along the way has impacted him, and he's kind of lost his joy. I think even Phil Neville kind of alluded to it or mentioned it very slightly a couple of weeks ago when he said that, you know, Pizarro had been playing with a smile again or with a sparkle in his eye that he hadn't been having So I think, again, just me, my thoughts, I think that there's something to that element here, because Pizarro obviously doesn't look anywhere like the player that he's expected to be, or that he was before. And just to quickly give you the second thing that you asked me, the biggest coaching decision, because I've kind of gone off track from there. I wrote it this week. I've said it this week. Phil Neville changed the game for the better for Inter Miami in the 66th minute of this last game. And he won the game for Inter Miami. Gonzalo Higuain scored the goal, but it was Phil Neville's tactical change that won the game for Inter Miami, because Inter Miami came out in the regular 4-2-3-1. Like I said, they work in moments when they could build up or knit together attacking sequences. But again, they still had problems in the final third creating quality chances. And they were getting carved open by CF Montreal on a few occasions, because Montreal was moving the ball pretty well with some good combination play, some quick, accurate, sharp passes. And that was giving Inter Miami trouble. So Phil Neville decides to put in Blaise Matuidi. In the moment, I was like, I wasn't sold on the move, but it proved to be a stroke of genius, because what he did, now, like, I'll try to paint it with my fingers here. The three and the two in the midfield, this midfield triangle right here, he inverted that. So instead of having a number 10, he had two eights, which were Ulloa and Blaise Matuidi, and Gregory was now the tip of the triangle, but it was upside down, right? So what that did was just give Inter Miami more bodies in the middle of the field. So I'll do it like that, so you can picture it like that. Right. And that gave them more bodies in the middle of the field, and CF Montreal could no longer build up as easily, because there's more bodies, there's more players, they're clogging up spaces. And it's so much so that if you watch the broadcast in the 71st minute, Wilfred Nancy, CF Montreal's head coach, looks away from the action, goes to his little white tactical board that I guess he had on the sidelines, and he has his little pieces on there, and he started looking for answers. I posted a picture of it on Twitter, on Miami Total Football's Instagram account as well. He literally is like looking for answers, because Phil Neville had pulled off a move that took control away from CF Montreal. And not only did it take control away from CF Montreal and more into Inter Miami's favor, it leads to the game-winning goal, because CF Montreal's players were confused how to build out. Remember, this move comes in the 66th minute. Gonzalo Higuain's game-winning goal comes off a high press where the center back gets kind of confused on the ball, loses it. Good pressing by Robbie Robinson and Gregory. Gonzalo Higuain gets on the end of it and scores. So 3 minutes after that change happened, Inter Miami finds the game-winning goal, and then they just hold on for the victory the rest of the way. So that's been Phil Neville's best coaching move this season, I think.
Should we look at the success they've had in the last two games with the tie and then the win, that guys are buying more into what Phil Neville is selling, or is it just maybe things fell into place? How do we look at this?
It's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. I would have to say, I think the jury's still out, because they got a draw against the Philly team that's pretty good, and then they beat Montreal. Those are good results.
Who kicked their ass the last time? Made them look really bad, actually.
Those are good results.
They play much better defense in this game than they did the first time around against Montreal, which was embarrassing.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely, absolutely. This was a much better performance, although I still have
Montreal carved them up in that first game. Remember that?
Yeah, of course. That was the first game.
Up, I was like, wow, dude, they were sinister, especially in that second half. It was just, oh man, it was ugly. And I got to give them some love, dude. They at least, whatever defense they played, they slowed them completely down compared to what they did in the last game. So again, that might be, again, credit to Neville. So are people buying into Neville now?
I think the jury's still out on it. I think what has helped them, and I think it's kind of gone under the radar a bit, and I think it deserves a little more talking point, is Victor Ulloa in the middle of the field there next to Gregory. With Blaise Matuidi coming out, I think that has strengthened Inter Miami, or solidified them defensively and strengthened their midfield, because Blaise Matuidi is obviously more talented and more decorated than Victor Ulloa, who's been an MLS player his whole career. Blaise Matuidi has won a World Cup, played at some of the biggest clubs in the world, in Europe, but he has not shown that level with Inter Miami by and large. He's had lapses in concentration that have cost goals. He has had defensive issues. And with Victor Ulloa back in there, Victor Ulloa has been quietly, he's not someone that wows you, he's not sexy, not a big name, but he's done his job almost to perfection in terms of what Phil asks of him to do. Moves the ball side to side, covers ground, breaks things up. He's done an exceptional job. I honestly think he was the best player in this last game. Gonzalo Higuain gets the plaudits and the spotlight because he's the goal scorer and he scored two goals. But Victor Ulloa, I think from minute one to minute 90, had a very complete performance. I gave him the highest grade in my player ratings. So keep an eye on him tonight. He'll be important for Inter Miami because with him in there and with Gregory next to him, they're able to have better spells of possession and control the ball, and that's allowed them to have better performances as well because they also don't have those defensive issues that cost them goals. So actually, we asked Phil about him on Monday, about Victor Ulloa, and he said flat out something that he and a lot of coaches don't tend to do, but he tipped his hand and he was like, Victor Ulloa will start on Wednesday because he's played that well. And he said, I think Victor Ulloa has gotten better, and I think Victor Ulloa makes the players around him better, and that's the biggest compliment I can give any player. That's what Phil Neville said on Monday. So keep an eye on Victor Ulloa. Maybe he goes out there today and has a terrible performance, but based on the last few games, he's quietly been one of Inter Miami's better players. I know fans might hear this and might be like, what? What is he talking about? Because the name doesn't pop out on the stat sheet. He's not someone that you know, scores goals, doesn't necessarily give assists. But his effort is there. And again, just his role, his function within the team, what he's asked to do, he does it too. He's been doing it very, very well. And also of note, that penalty kick, the equalizing penalty kick that sparks the comeback that comes in the 46th minute of the game, the first minute of the second half, it comes off a play where the ball's being cleared out by CF Montreal and Victor Ulloa, facing away from goal, doesn't give up on the play and just kicks the ball backwards into the goal. Hopefully hitting right. it, and it falls to right. Gonzalo Higuain. Just happens to follow Gonzalo Higuain. He tries to dribble. He falls. Federico gets the ball. He gets tripped. Penalty kick. Equalizing goal. So that starts with Victor Ulloa. So, you know, he doesn't get you the assist or the goals, but his effort is there, and we saw it, especially in this last game. He was vital to that equalizing goal.
Yeah, it's that's why sometimes I feel like have things kind of fall in their way, because that was kind of a lucky pass that fell in the right place, and he was able to finish it. And then Robbie's goal, you know, in the draw, it was stopped basically, but he didn't get a good hand on it, and it was able to sneak in and stuff. So
the ball has bounced their way.
Which by the way, there's a lot of times we could talk in the first month.
Right.
It did not bounce at all.
They were due for the ball to bounce their way.
Yeah, they were due.
That's why when you ask me, do I think Phil Neville has gotten the guys to buy in? I still think the jury's out. I think the ball has bounced their way. They've improved their performances, absolutely, but I don't think the improvements have been that great. I think the ball just happened to bounce their way finally in this time, and it's bound to happen over the course of a season. Ball sometimes doesn't bounce your way. You'll lose a game. Ball will bounce your way sometimes and you'll win a game. And then this one, it bounced the right way because even Federico Higuain's penalty kick, there's contact there, absolutely, but he sells it. Another referee might not point to the spot immediately. Another referee might take it to VAR and then say, there's not enough contact. But this time the decisions went their way, the bounces went their way, and they were able to get the victory as a result. Because even Gonzalo Higuain's game-winning goal, you know, he shoots it and the goalkeeper gets a hand to it. It looked like it was going out for a corner kick. I actually turned away, looked at my computer, was typing away in the press box. Phil Neville said after the game, he looked away because he thought it was going out for a corner kick. So, you know, the ball just happens to get looped into the goal after the goalkeeper gets a hand to it. So the bounces did go their way this time. But again, they'll even out over the course of the season. Or that's what the belief is normally. They're going to need to improve still because they're not going to get lucky bounces the majority of the rest of the way, I imagine.
Inter Miami fans, make sure you subscribe to Miami Total Football. Great podcast. Great information always from Franco Panizo. Follow him on Twitter at Franco Panizo. I let you go with this. Give me a preview. What are we watching tonight? Miami is on the road. This is not going to be easy for them.
Mm-hmm. I think they have more confidence. I think they have more belief. So I think they'll show better. But against Orlando, which they've had their issues lately, but they're still a very good team. Nani has scored 3 goals in 5 matches against Inter Miami, dating back to last year. So I say a 3-1 loss for Inter Miami tonight. But we'll see. We'll see how they do. If they can perform and get a point, even a point out of this one, I think that'd be a big statement and a big confidence booster, because it would show that, hey, look, we've not only gotten a couple of results at home, we're going to start doing it away from home and against some of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. A result tonight would go a long way, whether it's a draw or a win, would go a long way. I think it would make a statement and give him that much more confidence. So, but I don't see that happening. We'll see.
See it on the screen. Follow him on Twitter at Franco Panizo. Franco, enjoy the game tonight, my brother. Thank you for taking some time and dropping some knowledge. Always appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. See you soon.
You got it. There you go. Franco Panizo. Good stuff as always. Appreciate him joining us and talking a little Inter-Miami football. Nothing wrong with talking a little Inter-Miami football here on the program. Let's hope they can get the win overall, man. That would be really, really nice. What else do we have going on? We got the Big 12 and the Pac-12 talking about a partnership, reportedly. Let's see. Atlanta ends up signing John Collins to a 5-year, $125 million deal. 23-year-old man, would have been nice to get the South Florida kid to sign here, but again, Miami just didn't have the resources to acquire something like that. Let's see, what else do I have here? I told you about Philip Rivers not ruling out coming back, which would be an absolute disaster if he does. What else do we have that I saw? Fight at can you imagine having a fight at Dolphins camp and Tua's in the bottom of the pile? Like this whole thing with Daniel Jones yesterday. And listen, I'm not much of a Daniel Jones guy. I don't believe in him much. But if you're the quarterback, dude, stay away from fights and any kind of, you know, collisions. Watching Gus Frerotte headbutt the wall and just, you know, there's certain times that quarterbacks have been really dumb. Daniel Jones, that was definitely a moment. Robert Triana, thank you, sir, for giving us a little love on the super chat. He says, I'm catching up. That's why I keep it here, brother. Sports, COVID, crypto, life, love it. Thank you, Robert. Appreciate you, sir. Not that I really want to talk COVID at times. You know what I'm saying? I really don't want to do that at times. It crosses over, man. What am I going to do? So it is what it is. Dougie Fresh says, oh, Gruden's QB camp was Miss Cleo on football. Here's the show. One, get a QB in the room with a dry erase board. Two, sit in a chair and ask the QB to draw up a play. Three, look into the camera and say, wow, done. That's it. Yeah, that was basically the talent. Willie says, love you, Big O. Eating lunch on to Cincinnati. There we go. Mike No-Go Zone says, go Inter. Let's see. Daniel Jones is trash, Irving Figueroa says. I'm not a Daniel Jones fan at all. I saw him at the Senior Bowl, and I was just not impressed. And watching him at Duke, I never saw a starter. Maybe he turns into one, and I'm 1,000% wrong, and that's fine. I can live with it. But I got to tell you something. That is one dude that I just never bought into. Never thought that he could be the guy. Remember, folks, don't forget to smash the hell out of the like button. Okay, please. Smash the like button, subscribe, share it all. New York Giants fan here. I saw the brawl as a character building occurrence. I don't know, man. How do you build character getting your quarterback getting his ass kicked? I don't know about that, man. I mean, the only quarterback I could see could handle being at the bottom of the pile is maybe Cam Newton because he's such a big dude. But I don't want to see any quarterback in the bottom of the pile. If I'm a Giants fan, that part is disturbing. I mean, it's disturbing as it is that you've got Daniel Jones. But then it's even more disturbing that the guy you don't think can ever be the guy, but just in case he might be the guy, I don't want him getting injured in the pile. I just found that funny that would happen. FSU, by the way, has denied that they are trying to go to the SEC. So they said there's zero truth about that. So that report of FSU and Clemson, not accurate. Okay. Is there a salary cap in the MLS? If so, how close to the limit is? Oh, Miami's over. They're at the limit. They have no space. And although the international guys don't count against your cap. So Higuain, what's it called? Pizarro and Matuidi aren't counting against your cap. We'll find out if Moss wants to really improve. He's going to have to do something that he probably doesn't want to do, because there's a reason how billionaires become billionaires, because they make really good decisions business-wise, and they don't like making, you know, decisions that will cost them money. And that's why they're usually billionaires. But in their case, you're going to have to swallow some money, because if you really want to be good, Pizarro's untradeable pretty much at the salary that he has, and so is Matuidi. Nobody's going to pay those salaries, so you're going to have to trade them for practically nothing or cut them outright and just swallow the salary that's left. Because then you can go get two more DPs and get two guys that are hopefully way better than these guys and actually add something to the team and help Higuain. As much as Higuain has been, you know, a bit of a disappointment because he doesn't score at the clip that you're paying him to score, you want him to score, I can't blame everything on Higuain, man. I just can't. He's had his moments where he should have closed out some of these plays, but I just feel like they have failed to put around him what he needs in order to excel. So I'm not ready to blame Higuain or anything like that. It's like Neville. I could disagree with some things with Neville, but in the end, he inherited all this stuff. The man's got to be given an opportunity to kind of weed all that stuff out and get his own team so you can measure him. You know what I mean? Let's see what else. I don't think there's anything there I see on the chat board. I don't think I have anything else. I do want to thank Matt Owen and Robert Triana. Appreciate you guys sending in a little love on the super chat. Very kind of you all out there. Let's see, what else do I have here? Anything on the Big O Radio Show at yahoo.com? Because remember, you guys can reach out to us at Big O Radio Show at yahoo.com. That's another way to reach out to the program. We are going to wrap it up here on the show. We thank all of you out there as always. Appreciate you guys for supporting us every single day. Don't forget to smash the hell out of that like button if you haven't before you leave. Please subscribe to the program on the podcast, on YouTube, share the link, visit our sponsors. We thank Alan Poupart. We thank Franco Panizo. We thank Ira Winderman and Clay Ferraro. We got more guests tomorrow. Ruthie Polinsky is going to join us tomorrow. We'll have some other guests also. We'll get ready for a big Friday also tomorrow. It's Thursday, so we're only a day away from the end of the week. Again, you all be safe out there. Much love. Enjoy Marlins baseball. Enjoy Inter Miami. We will see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Same bat channel.
When you need your warehouse looking good while staying efficient, there's only one place to find the finest racks in the business. Pallet Rack City in Hialeah. 305-424-8547. That's 305-424-8547. Pallet Rack City is the company you need when you want your warehouse sporting the finest racks in the business. After all, who doesn't love a great rack? Pallet Rack City. 305-424-8547. That's 305-424-8547.